Money, 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 money. Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dowiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dowiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money better, and I've got some great topics this week. We're going to talk about what the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said about rate cuts in the September meeting. We're going to look at some government ideas on some long-term care solutions that might be very, very helpful if they get implemented. We're going to look at health insurance enrollment dates. And then finally, in the Ask Peggy segment, I'm going to answer a question I was asked at least four times last week, which is, Peggy, should I buy Bitcoin? So let's get started with the Bulls and Bears market and economic update. This is for the week ending August 22nd. Today is now the 25th. It is the last full week of August. Summer is almost over, and we have our season's first cold front. I'm a warm weather girl. My favorite season is spring. I think now my second favorite season is summer. I used to like fall, but as I've gotten older, I like warm weather better. But the markets had a good week last week, for the most part, mostly fueled by a massive rally on Friday that kind of saved what would have otherwise been a not-so-great week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up about 1.5%, and the S&P 500 closed up about 0.25%. The NASDAQ wasn't able to completely shake off its losses from earlier in the week, and it closed down about 0.6%. Gold was up a little over 1%, and oil was up 1%. And right now, the current price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude at the front month price is $63.77. The dollar was down 0.12%. The 10-year Treasury yield was down about 5.7%, and that current rate is 4.264%. Because the 10-year yield was down 5%, the aggregate bond fund ETF was up about 0.4%. Bitcoin was down about 2.25%, and the volatility index, the VIX, was also down about 5.75%. So what triggered the massive rally on Friday? That was the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, also called Jay Powell, saying that he could anticipate a September rate cut, and that is because of some of the employment data that is coming in. We've talked in earlier shows about the problem the Fed has when inflation is bad and unemployment is bad, because there are opposite patterns that the Fed takes to fix those two things. If unemployment is going up, the Fed cuts rates, and if inflation is going up, the Fed raises rates. Well, last week, Jerome Powell suggested that he is in fact going to look at the unemployment data more than the inflation data and potentially cut rates. So, of course, the market was thrilled. That caused the Dow Jones Industrial Average to go up about 800 points on Friday. It was really pretty amazing that it went up as much as it did. So, good news for the market, potentially. I think the Fed rate cut isn't going to hurt a thing. Again, if you've listened to the show before, you know that I think the other reason that Jay Powell is doing this, and I was listening to some business news on my drive to work this morning, I'm not the only one thinking this, that a little bit of a rate cut might make some of the political decisions that are being made right now a little less frightening. So the President of the United States cannot fire the Chairman of the Federal Reserve. We set it up that way on purpose, right? We're trying to make sure that those two branches of government are operating independently, because an independent Federal Reserve is absolutely critical to the free market survival of the United States economy. We do not want a Fed chair who, every time the president says something, the chair just says, okay, yes, anything you say. That's what you see in emerging countries. That's what you see in countries where we don't believe the economic data. And that's already becoming a little bit of a question right now. It depends upon many things, how much of a problem you think it is. But no doubt it's not great. And so an independent Fed is critical for people believing that U.S. economic data is valid. Nevertheless, the Fed has some room to move. Now, remember, the Fed isn't going to make, the Fed chair does not make this decision on his own. There's an entire board of governors, and they all vote, and it isn't like Jerome Powell gets extra points when he votes. So if, in fact, the rest of the Fed board of governors believes that this is a bad idea, then rates will not cut in September. But I think probably they're all on about the same page, and I think that they probably will be a cut. It may be to kind of tamp down some of the political rhetoric, which, again, you don't want the Fed being swayed completely by the government. But one time during the first Trump administration, there was a pretty big standoff between Jerome Powell and President Trump. And Powell gave him a little bit, and it kind of calmed the whole thing down. I have a feeling that that might be what's going on right now. Added to the fact that with the unemployment data not being great, the Fed can justify the move. Okay, if unemployment was doing just fine and we only had inflation, there is no way the Fed would be cutting rates in September. But given that they have some data to back it up, it will happen. It's not a bad idea. I would be fine either way personally. I know that people will eventually have this trickle down to where interest rates, if you are a borrower, get lower. So it would be good for the housing market. It would be good for the automobile industry. It's good for anyone who is acquiring debt to have those interest rates lower. It's also good for the U.S. economy insofar as we have a lot of debt that has interest attached to it. And so anything that brings those rates down lowers the amount of money that we owe. So we'll wait and see. I really think, barring some catastrophic economic data, there will be a quarter point. I'd be surprised if it's more than that. So, you know, it certainly won't be 1%. It might be 0.5%. So it's either going to be 0.25% or 0.5%. We'll just have to wait and see how the data plays out. But for right now, it's pretty good news for anybody who needs to borrow money.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I have some really exciting legislation to talk about today. Now, it hasn't become law, and I will say, as I always say when I am talking about proposals or bills, you know, law isn't a law until it actually gets passed. But this would help to solve the problem of underfunded long-term care. As we have developed more cures for more diseases, more and more people are needing extended care for extended periods of time. You know, now that we've made so many advancements in heart disease, it is much less likely that someone dies of a heart attack than it was, say, 75 years ago. And this is a great thing. But that kind of advancement is causing more people to die of dementia or other very end-of-life issues, And as a result, most people need care at the end of their lives, and this care can get really expensive. So the WISH Act, which is well-being, and they've hyphenated it so the B doesn't count, Insurance for Seniors at Home Act. This legislation was first introduced in 2021. It was a bipartisan introduction this year with a Democrat from New York and a Republican from Michigan. And basically, it's creating a Social Security style funding where money is taken directly out of someone's paycheck, but at a small enough rate that they are able to probably withstand that loss. It goes into a fund that is designed to help pay for care. You have an elimination period before you'd be eligible for the benefits of about a year. And in order to receive the full benefit amount, you would have to have 40 quarters of coverage. So that would be 10 years of paying into this new governmental service is probably a better way of saying it. Once it's been implemented, it would cover 6 hours a day of care at the median United States rate, which means if you live in a less expensive state, the benefit is likely better, kind of the same way that the Affordable Care Act works, so that you have the money that you need to be able to pay for these caregivers. The change to the American financial security is going to be absolutely extraordinary, because right now, overall, there's about 42% of the country that does not have enough money to pay for its end-of-life care. This would drop that number to 19%. So there would still be people who would have end-of-life financial issues, but a 42% drop to a 19% drop is really extraordinary. It would help single people more, which really there's no huge surprise in that for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's half as much money. Many people, they use both salaries, but they don't use every penny of both salaries. So the single people are only surviving on one salary. And in addition to that, if you are single and you begin to slip, you are needing to have care faster than if there's someone else already living in the home, even if that person has some medical issues themselves. The two of you can kind of hobble through the situation for longer than a person can living on their own. So single women, the shortfall drops from 58% to 28%. And single men, it goes from 48% to 19%. I think that the reason for that is because men don't live quite as long as women. And because men don't live as long as women, they don't tend to have quite as many years in need of that really extraordinary level of care. So I'm going to be following this really, really closely. I will give you any updates. I hope this can pass. I have been very worried ever since I have been a caregiver a number of times for the financial situations that can arise when you need care and there's simply not enough money. And maybe the Medicaid facility is close to where the family lives. Maybe it isn't. Maybe there aren't any beds within any reasonable distance. And even though there is some home health care Medicaid, a lot of the medical community isn't willing to provide the services because they aren't willing to work for that amount of money. So we're going to follow WISH very closely. We're going to hope we get something good out of this, and I will keep you in the loop.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today I want to talk about Medicare open enrollment and Affordable Care Act, ACA, also called Obamacare, open enrollment. So if you've been watching the television recently, you will see all sorts of senior citizen actors talking about the advantage to the Medicare Advantage plan and how much better it is than Medicare Part A and B. So that's because Medicare open enrollment is starting October 15th and it's running through December 7th. And if you're wanting to make a change in your Medicare enrollment and you haven't had any other kind of qualifying event that let you make the change another time of the year, this is when you do it. But here is the caution that I would give you. First of all, just because you're hearing a million advertisements about why you should be taking a specific form of financial action, you need to talk to your financial team before you make a change. Some people really like Medicare Advantage plans, but be aware that they are private insurance that has promised to provide the same benefits with some additional ones as traditional Medicare. However, there are some downsides to this as well, one of which is there will be a list of approved doctors that a specific Medicare Advantage plan will cover. And if your doctors aren't on that list, you have to change. This can be more problematic for older people who might have more health issues and have long-term relationships with the doctors that they use. Additionally, when you're using a Medicare Advantage plan, there is generally a gatekeeper that will decide whether or not you're allowed to do a specific course of treatment or take a specific medication. Again, sometimes these plans work really well, but people see the freebies and they don't look any further than that. And quite frankly, the ads are misleading. You have to get right up on your television to read the disclaimers. One of the disclaimers, if you can read it, will say, this is not a traditional Medicare plan. So if you want to stop that ad in the middle and freeze frame it and then go up and read the fine print, I would suggest that you do so. I would also talk to my doctors and any specialist that I was using about whether or not they are covered on the specific Medicare Advantage program that you're wanting to use. I would check with my hospital system and make sure that they are covered by the specific Medicare Advantage plan you are wanting to use. So it's really important to be careful with this. Also, be aware that changing insurances once your initial qualification is over and you're trying to make a change might involve underwriting. So when you originally sign up for Medicare, there isn't underwriting. No one can exclude you or charge you more because of your specific medical conditions. However, when you make changes, there may be underwriting and the price of the insurance may be higher than you're expecting it to be. That doesn't mean making the change is the bad decision. I just want you to ask lots and lots of questions before you take an action and discover later that it wasn't something that was in your best interest. So the Medicare open enrollment is October 15th through December the 7th, and that will give you the opportunity to look at everything. You know, we're still in August, but the ads have already started, so maybe you want to go ahead and look at some things now while you have time and you're not feeling pressured. Remember, if someone contacts you and wants you to buy a policy, you should always get the information first and make the actual sale as a separate meeting. You know, there's a lot of research out there in marketing that says you want the person to say yes on that initial meeting. I am advising you that whether you end up saying yes or not, you should absolutely be sure it's what you want to do. Now, the Medicare open enrollment periods are different than the Affordable Care Act open enrollment periods. The Affordable Care Act is November 1st for the first state, and it runs through December 15th. So if you're wanting to make changes to your Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare, also called the healthcare marketplace, then you can do that between November 1st and December 15th. It's a slightly shorter period than it's been in the past, but it's still plenty of time to look at the different policies and the different plans and make sure that what you are using still works for you. Remember, on both Medicare and the Affordable Care Act, it's possible to make changes outside of this open enrollment period if you have a change in circumstance. So if you get a new job, you can enroll in ACA outside of the November 1st open period. The open period just allows people who already have policies to make a change for no good reason. And although previously existing conditions are not allowed to be part of the cost of the Affordable Care Act, you always want to make sure that whether you're working in Medicare or you're working in ACA, that you're not doing something that's going to cause your expense to go up in ways that you're not anticipating it. Remember, too, that as you're trying to come up with your Affordable Care Act plan, one of the questions on the cost of the policy has to do with your anticipated income for next year. So they're going to be figuring your premiums based off of your anticipated 2026 revenue. If you discover late into the year that you've been earning too much money, they will change your premiums. So it's really important to look at next year's financial situation as reasonably as you can and try to come up with a way to be sure that everything is covered. So look at the plans. If you like Medicare Advantage, that's fine. Just be aware of what you're buying. If you want to make a change to your Affordable Care Act policy, that's also fine. Be aware of what you're buying. Remember, my job on this show is not to tell you what to do. I'm just trying to help you see anything you might need to consider before you make the decision that's going to help you prosper.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And sometimes I answer questions that I want somebody to be asking. But last week, I had so many people asking me whether or not I thought they should be buying Bitcoin. In fact, I had so many people asking me that it makes me nervous. It makes me wonder if, in fact, we are closer to the end of this current Bitcoin rally than even I thought we were. Because here is something to be aware of when you're looking at something that is very bubble-ish. And whether you like Bitcoin as an entity or not has nothing to do with the fact that it has gone up a lot in the last year. So you always want to be careful when you're buying something. If it's very, very speculative, you don't want to be the person who buys it at its highest point. This happened back in the dot-com bubble around the year 2000 when everybody thought the internet was going to change the world. And as a result, companies didn't need earnings because that was the old-fashioned economy. Well, as it ended up, the internet did change the world and companies still need earnings. So just because A is true doesn't necessarily mean that B is true as well. So I'm going to give you my opinion about Bitcoin. I'm going to start out with the disclaimer that is always kind of fast at the end of the show, a little bit slower so that you understand that I don't know your personal financial condition, and things that I might be concerned about might work just fine for you. So what I'm going to try to give you, rather than telling you whether you should do this or not, are some guidelines. And I want to start out with one of my biggest issues about Bitcoin, which is I still don't know what it is. There are people out there who will tell you that the US dollar is going to collapse and that Bitcoin is going to be the currency of the future. Or maybe they choose another form of cryptocurrency. Specifically, last week, everybody asked me about Bitcoin. So the other coins are not different in my concerns, but I'm specifically talking about Bitcoin right now. Well, if you believe the dollar is going to collapse and Bitcoin is going to be the new currency, then that's going to be one reason why you would buy it. But I have other people who don't think it's ever going to be a currency, but they love how much it's going up. So they're buying it purely for the investment play of it. That is a different purpose. And then for a very long time, because some of Bitcoin lurks in the shadows, some of the people who have used it have been a little nefarious. So if you don't want people to see your transactions, that's another reason. I don't know how something is an investment if you don't know what it is. Additionally, anyone with means can create their own cryptocurrency, and eventually we could get to the same location we were as the United States before we had the dollar, where every single state had its own currency. In the crypto universe, that means everybody with some money has their own currency. And it didn't work well in the early country, and I don't think it's going to work well today. Additionally, even though, yes, it goes up a lot, right? When it goes down by quite a bit. And I don't know how you make an expensive purchase in something that is very volatile in its value. So I'm not going to buy a house in something that might go up or down in a single day by 20%, because maybe I get a deal and maybe I don't. So I have trouble looking at it as a currency for expensive things. So because of that, I see this as a speculative play, not a long-term investment. I see it if someone wants to purchase Bitcoin and they want to try to make some money because it's going up. I see that as very different than buying it as a long-term investment. And because it might be a speculative play, you need to have an exit strategy if you choose to buy it, which means when you get in, you need to know what's going to trigger your getting out. Additionally, it is now available as a fund. And if you were to buy a Bitcoin fund, it's going to trade on the open market and you're going to take the platform risk out of the equation. That might make it slightly safer. It's fewer things to go wrong, and it may put you into a situation where if you needed to sell it, it would be easier. Think about all of this before you choose to buy.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.